Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. I am one of your hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash, because Johnny's falling apart. That's why I'm joining him. Yes! There it is. Joke of the night. That's it.
Never gets old.
Oh, man, I used that before. Fuck. Anyway.
To quote Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, well, no one's laughing now.
Great performance. Could have been a better movie. Could have been a better story. Anyway, go ahead, Johnny.
But that kind of ties into this evening's topic.
Yeah, it does.
You know, because we just did a show about horror movies that played better for us on subsequent viewings than on initial viewings. And, well, as there are two sides to every coin, I'm sure there were instances where we've watched things that we really liked on a first viewing, and then when we revisit them, we're like, oh,
what was I thinking?
Yeah, what did I see in that? Why is this not playing as well as it did that magical first time I saw it? So, yeah, we just decided it was kind of a natural segue of topic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going to discuss tonight. Billy and myself each picked four films to talk about. So... Right. Yeah, pretty self-explanatory and straightforward. So Billy won the coin toss backstage before we started recording. So I will let Bill go first with one of his movies.
You'll let Dildo first? What?
Bill, what you do in the privacy of your own home, man, you know.
What I do in the privacy of my own home would make people squirm. Anyway. It was really funny because this movie was filmed near me. It was filmed in the town where my mother spent her last days, ate at the diner where the actors ate, took pictures on the street where one of the women in the film ran screaming for her life. And there's elements of it that I do like, but that's Friday the 13th. And when I saw it when I was younger on HBO, I was watching it with my dad. And it's the scene that I know most people can't get out of their head that I really think put Tom Savini on like everybody's lips, as I know he would probably want from everything I've read. Tom Savini does this amazing special effect, and where you know, Kevin Bacon, if you haven't seen Friday the 13th, I mean, what the hell. You know, gets this arrow through his throat, and it was like, holy shit. And I loved what they did with the story, parts of it, but going back for a rewatch, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking, where this was so great, where it actually isn't? You know, it has one of my favorite endings in horror, has some great special effects to it. It has a really cool twist that they exploit in the meta movie Scream. You know, thanks to the late, great... thank you so much. I lost his name. I could see his face. I could see his smiling face. But it was just really weird how I went from like, holy shit, that was amazing, to no, it's not. You know, I just like... And it was just... Because I've seen it many times, and it's like... And I don't know if that element of diminishing returns comes into play because of how slasher films became so ultra formulaic, where it was like, oh, they're all the red shirts. Oh, she's smart and nice. She's the final girl. Let's watch everybody die and eat popcorn, you know? And it was just, I don't know if it was because of that, but it was cool to see a slasher film with a twist and, you know, with some really great practical effects, but in the end. And then it became this franchise of, talk about diminishing returns. Holy shit. Was it Jason in space and all of this crap? Like, holy, that was so laughable. I don't even know what to say. But
yeah, Bill, I understand what you're saying. I do like the original Friday the 13th. And I, granted, though, like you, I haven't watched it in quite some time. But I do remember thinking it was pretty well crafted. I liked the twist. There was a bit of creativity to it, and the fact that Tom Savini was really hot at the time,
Yeah.
With that stash of his and that FX wizardry of his. I think that those were things that played in the film's favor and made it seem maybe a step up from what would follow, I think, which,
Right.
like you said, became more and more degraded as more and more films were being made in that
Yeah.
vein. I'm a bigger fan of Friday the 13th Part 2 than the first one.
No, that I know, and I want to give a fifth chance to, because you love it so much, and a lot of other fans really hold that in high regard, so I want to check that one out again.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like you said, with the first film, I think Friday the 13th takes some of the innovative ideas of the first one and does some of its own stuff. Like,
Right.
I really love the way that the final girl is a psych major, and she actually uses psychology to kind of subdue the beast, so to speak, in the film. And I think that's a really that's still a really inspired touch. It's not just, oh, she was just lucky, she was actually thinking under pressure in a really bad situation. But there's other stuff I like about that film. I do think it's just at least as effective as the original, and does some unique things. But then, kind of like, yeah, I think there's a drop off in consistency after that point, and things just get increasingly silly and far-fetched, I know they're just movies, but Friday, not Halloween, and Nightmare on Elm Street, they all suffered kind of the same fate, where it was just like, oh, these movies are still successful. How do we milk it for a few dollars more? So
Yep, I hear you, man.
yeah, but I, Bill, if I could ask, what was the how many years had passed between your first viewing of Friday the 13th and then the next time you viewed it when you didn't like it, just out of curiosity,
It
if
was
you had
like,
to guess?
it was like 15 years, I would say.
Okay, all
And
right.
I'm like, oh yeah, Friday the 13th. And I put it on, and I'm like, what the hell, man? Like, where had my brain gone? I didn't know. You're doomed.
They were making love while he was watching 15 years worth of slasher films and diminishing my effect.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is probably something to that, because that's a long there's a lot of stuff to absorb in a decade and a half, and I'm sure, yeah, I could see that having an adverse effect on things, possibly. So yeah, for sure. Okay, good one, Bill.
I hope. I don't know. What do you got?
Not controversial at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost like just put myself in a corner.
No, I like that, Bill. It keeps things interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm gonna go with a film that it's not as well known as Friday the 13th, but I think it has something of a following, enough of a following to get a Scream Factory release on Blu-ray not too long ago. And that is Eric Red's film Body Parts.
Oh man.
Have you seen Body Parts, Bill?
Yes, I have, and
Okay.
I have to look it up.
Okay.
So it
Well,
has been a while.
yeah, it's
From 91, right?
with Jeff Fahey.
Crap. I don't even have that rated. Did I miss it?
I don't know.
Uh-oh. I got to add that to my list then, just in case. It might have been a long time ago. Brad Dourif's in it. That's good enough for me.
If you take a look at some stills, you'd probably know if you saw it. But
I think I might have missed it, man.
okay,
I
well,
don't
you
know
know,
how.
this is a movie I picked up. I remember picking up on DVD for cheap at FYE years ago, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, I really liked it a lot. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. But I hadn't watched it. I'd only watched it that one time, and then Scream Factory announced they were doing like sort of a special edition Blu-ray. Well, maybe not a special edition, but upgrading it to Blu-ray and having some special features, and I'm all about what they do. So I picked that up and I watched it probably last year, and I was just like, ooh, yeah.
It stinks.
I wouldn't go so far as to say it stinks, but I was just really sitting there like disappointed and wondering where my 3.5 stars came from, because I think when I re-logged it on Letterboxd, I think I knocked at least a whole star off that rating.
I did that with Friday the 13th. I had it at 4 stars, 4.5 actually, and I knocked it down to 3. 3's still good, so
Yeah.
nobody throw an axe at my head. That means I still think it's a good film, but it's not on that super duper list.
Yeah, and that's just kind of the same thing here. It's like, I'm a fan of Eric Red because I think he's written some interesting films. The Hitcher is horror royalty. He wrote Near Dark with Catherine Bigelow. That's another good one. And he's done some smaller films that he's also directed. Bad Moon, which I thought was a pretty good werewolf movie with some rough around the edges effects. And this crime thriller, which I really like with Roy Scheider, called Cohen and Tate. It's just a really super violent kidnapping film, which was his directorial debut. And this one is kind of like, it has some of the stuff that makes an Eric Red film, because there's some good action scenes in it. There's like a car chase that's pretty pretty wild, involving two people who are handcuffed together in two separate cars that are speeding along the highway. There's stuff like that. And the whole thing is kind of inspired, I think, in part by stuff like The Hands of Orlok, where it's like a someone, a guy, in this case, a guy loses his, believe he loses his arm or his hand or something like that, and he gets someone else's arm transplanted onto him. And this is where Bill says, "I hope they have the same blood type."
Yes, exactly. You stole my line.
But even ignoring that, it's just like, okay, well, his arm starts to exhibit these monstrous tendencies, and it's like, okay, the arm is from a killer, and sort of the film is his quest to kind of, I guess, regain his autonomy, kind of, and to find out what the driving force is behind this experiment, which is kind of a conspiracy thing. But the thing with the film is, it's kind of, even at like 90 minutes, it's kind of, I thought the pace was a bit slow. The action is kind of a bit sloppy in the editing and choreography, I think. Like the car chase I was talking about, it's kind of chaotically shot, but not kind of like in a what the heck were they thinking way, not really in a, oh my gosh, it's just kind of swish, scissor cut kind of stuff, and you're still within it. It's more like it's cut in a way that doesn't entirely make sense, but since it's moving so fast, you don't really notice. And the other thing that kind of killed it for me this time around was there's this voiceover narration that Jeff Fahey has to deliver in the film. And he's like a doctor, I think, and he's keeping a journal of what he's going through. So this is like a great way to like get exposition out there. But all of this voiceover is like cheesy, really cheesy, "It was a dark and stormy night" kind of
Oh,
stuff.
God. A
It's
shot rang out. The maid screamed.
exactly.
Go,
It is almost
Snoopy, go!
good grief. And it is almost, in terms of that, it is almost that bad. It's like, oh my gosh, this is some really hammy 1950s B movie kind of stuff we're dealing with here. And this was like 91 or 90, and I'm just like, there's no, even at that time, there was really no excuse for that sort of thing.
Right,
It's
right,
like,
right.
I do better. So I was disappointed with Body Parts the second time around.
Wow, man. Parts is parts.
Parts are not equal to the whole, apparently.
Gestalt or something. But anyway.
Gesundheit, Bill.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is funny because this is another older one too. And I remember watching this one with my family in a packed, I mean packed theater. Everybody screaming, everybody freaking out, popcorn flying, people going nuts. And I'm like, holy shit, you know, and I'm like watching this thing and I'm spellbound. I watched it a couple times after that. It became a franchise and, you know, diminishing returns, blah, blah, blah. But then I watched it. I couldn't wait to get my hands on it. And then this was only like 5 or 6 years ago. I'm like, I saw it on DVD on sale and I'm like, holy crap, I can finally own it. And I put it in, I give it a whirl, and I'm falling asleep on this thing. And I'm like,
I think I know what it is.
I think you know too. It's Poltergeist. It mm-hmm. is. I didn't realize how drawn out and long the scenes were, and how like all of that wildness came in. It took a long time to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And but even then, and this is 82, it came out, so I saw it in theaters. I was 17. And this is when that movie critic thing started to come into my head, because, you know, Joe Beth Williams gets caught in this swimming pool hole full of rainwater and mud, and the bodies are coming out from under it. And I'm like, that's deeper than 10 feet. They bury bodies at 6 feet. They would have been hitting bodies all the time. None of these homes could have basements. And I'm like, this is bullshit. So, but anyway, so I watched this, you know, thing, and it was – got caught up in all of that emotion from the crowd and all. And it just doesn't have that weight anymore. I still hold it in high regard. I think it's a well-crafted story, great acting, blah, blah, blah. You could talk about the cursed film aspect all you want. You could talk about whether Toby Hooper directed it or not. Yes, he did, because he wouldn't have gotten credit for it. That's not how the DGA works, or the PGA, or Hollywood, and all of that. But I just couldn't believe how slow the movie actually turned out to be, and how this almost 2-hour film could have easily been an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the scene where the guy's, you know, looking in the mirror and he's like, you know, because he bit into this drumstick full of maggots and he's ripping his face off. People were doing like, nobody really was doing backflips, but it was close enough. Oh my God! And people are freaking out. And I'm like, holy crap, this is awesome. And I think I took a nap during that scene when I watched it again. But anyway, no, it just didn't have the effect, you know.
Well, how would you rank Poltergeist next to the sequels, Bill?
Oh God, man! Other than the creepy pastor, who I don't think that poor man, I don't think they did any makeup on him at all.
Doesn't look like it.
No, it don't. No, wow, that was something else. No, I did. That was definitely the best of the bunch, man. That was definitely it.
You know, Bill. I've only really seen Poltergeist like one time. I think.
Holy crap! Like,
yeah, and it wasn't. It was probably maybe 10 years ago. They used to play it on TV when I was little, so I would catch bits and pieces, but never the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? I honestly can't remember too much of it from when I watched it. You know, except the stuff you were mentioning, the corpses coming to the surface near in the rainstorm, and
yeah,
the ghost coming out of the closet, the clown, and
the tree and all that crap,
and the chairs stacking themselves on the table, you know,
the screaming and, kid.
You know, I do see how that, and I do think they're here. Mm. And I do think there's something maybe to this film. So even if you believe 100% that Toby Hooper directed the whole thing, you still have Spielberg in the producer's chair.
Yeah.
And I believe he co-wrote the thing too, I think.
Yeah, he did, with Michael Gray and Mark Victor.
Okay.
It's good. It's good. I mean, I still have it at 3.5 stars, but it wasn't like the 4.5 I once thought it was.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's kind of probably how I felt while I was watching it. I mean, the whole thing I was getting at with Spielberg is that even at that time, I felt he was kind of leaning into doing stuff bigger, kind of, and that meant like more drawn out. That's why Poltergeist, I think, is almost 2 hours long, which for, you know, for a horror movie at that time, even probably a big mainstream horror movie like that was probably still a hefty time investment and probably a hefty risk, I guess, mm-hmm. on the producer's part. Because I think about then what a couple years later, Spielberg, I think he executive produced and wrote the treatment for The Goonies.
Yeah.
And I think I told you I rewatched that at the drive-in back mm-hmm. in June. And I was like, good Lord, again, that's another movie where the scenes go on so long and the movie drags out to almost 2 freaking hours. Yeah. I'm like, Jesus, it's like exactly what you said about it. You know, that's another movie that could have been done in 90 minutes and been a whole lot more effective and endearing. But
yeah, it's funny because, you know, I'm not ripping the man apart or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's given us some great films, but Steven Spielberg, he's not on my top 10 best directors list, you know?
I don't think he's on mine either.
Yeah. Duel, yeah, I think, I still say is one of his best things. You know, Jaws was great. The ending was just silly because it couldn't happen. But the which sucks because otherwise it would be on my best of list. But Duel is just intense, man. That was like probably one of the most intense television dramatic horrors you could ever see, thrillers.
Well, and there you got that script by Richard Matheson too, which is very minimalist kind of slow burn type thing. I need to watch that proper. I've never seen that one from start to finish.
We need to do a show on Matheson. Down the road.
Oh yeah, well that we could do a series on him actually. Shit, we could do much stuff.
The Matheson podcast.
Yeah, we That's could do it. our first spinoff podcast.
Fuck that. Sorry, go ahead, man. Give us another.
Well, you know what, Bill? Something you said about Poltergeist is something that it really underlines how I feel about this film.
Ooh.
When you were talking about the emotion from the crowd kind of swaying your feelings mm-hmm. for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say,
mm-hmm.
one of the movies I was most excited to see, actually it was one of the first movies I ever saw back in 2009 in the theater, was My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Oh, 3D? Was this the remake?
This was the remake. The
one with that's
Tom Atkins and Jamie King.
Yeah, that was. I know Palco Designs. I know he digs that one. But so I watched it and I'm like, what the? And then I watched the original and I'm like, yeah, the original, man. Someone once called it the filet mignon of slasher films, and maybe it's a good shell steak, but. Yeah, that 3D, man. Oof. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, no. And I guess I'll apologize to Pal. I guess I'll apologize to Palco. He'll probably give me an earful at some point.
you deserve it.
Well, this was a case of a movie being really smartly marketed. This was back when Lionsgate was kind of the reigning king of like releasing kind of edgier horror fare into the mainstream.
Yeah, and that waned for reasons I don't understand. Go ahead, man. Sorry.
Yeah, no. It's okay. I think they just got big and tried to play. They're still kind of trying to be big, you know, be one of the bigger studios.
Yeah, but, you got it.
But you know, this was interesting because I feel like this was one of the first. This was kind of at the start of the whole. New 3D wave that kind mm-hmm. of swept cinemas. And I mean, technically up until theaters were closing, you know, stuff was still being shown in real D 3D. So I was excited to see this. And at the time I didn't have much of a social life and I had tons of personal leave from my job. So I would take Fridays off when a movie I wanted to see was opening and I would go to the first screening of it. So that's what I did with this. And, you know, it was a packed theater full of people who were kind of like rowdy and, you know, really, I think, itching to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was like, that was kind of perfect because once the movie started and things start to happen, it's just like, oh wow, oh yeah, all the they did the 3D extremely well in that movie.
That's cool.
So of course, once, you know, after I got out of the theater feeling all high from the experience, you know, just laughing and gasping at so much stuff, you know, when it came out on DVD, I was like, I'm picking it up on DVD. And at the time, I think Blu-ray 3D was a thing back then. Don't mm-hmm. quote me.
Right.
But I picked up the DVD and you could watch it in 2D or 3D. And it had, you had like the two pairs of like paper glasses with the mm-hmm. blue and red eye lenses on it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I was like, so I turned the movie on and I'm watching it with these cheap cardboard glasses and I'm like, ooh, the 3D looked bad. Needless to say, it did not translate well to the home screen. I can't speak for how the 3D Blu-ray and people with the capability of playing that felt, but
right.
I think the fact that the 3D was so bad brought into sharper focus everything that was wrong with the story of
exactly.
that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And just the gaps in logic and sense and character and
just going
everything. That movie was just like, oh, some really cringeworthy acting. Unfortunately, I won't name names, but
you're protecting the guilty.
Yeah, but it's just, it was like, you could tell they wrote this movie, and I won't fault Patrick Lussier, who directed it, and, you know, I think he has a good grasp of 3D.
Yeah.
Because he did Drive Angry, which I didn't like, but again, I saw
it was more like Drive Annoyed.
Yeah, it wasn't angry enough.
No.
But, you know, it was a movie that had that movie had great 3D in the theatrical version as well, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, My Bloody Valentine 3D, even with the great Tom Atkins and, you know, wandering around and being just Tom Atkins-y, I was just like, no, it's not good. The original is way better, like you said.
Yeah, I just watched the original like 2 weeks ago because I'm like, I'm spending 45 minutes hunting on Prime and Netflix for something, and I'm like, screw this, I'm watching My Bloody Valentine.
That, you know, the good thing about that movie, Bill, is it is hugely rewatchable.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. I and again, maybe going back to what the remake is missing because it got so caught up in the 3D gimmick, that film really crafts suspense.
Yep.
Gives you multi-dimensional characters to
yep.
root for and care about. And the special effects are fantastic in that film. So yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a blast. I love it.
We love you, Canada.
Oh, Canada. I'm sorry. well, this one I recently watched again too because I always loved the sequel. And I hadn't seen it in like 20, 25 years, but I read this amazing book, If Chins Could Kill, about the great Groovy Bruce Campbell, and who I love, admire, respect, and all that fun stuff. And I always loved Evil Dead 2. To me, that's one of my favorite horror comedies. It's awesome. It's just loaded. It's just loaded, loaded, loaded. And in the book, If Chins Could Kill, there are all these stories about how they worked so hard to get money from dentists and everything, investors to make this movie. They were freezing their ass off in the middle of the forest trying to make this at this cabin, which has been burnt to the ground, doesn't exist, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, yeah, you know, it's time I gave Evil Dead a good look again because I blew it off. And man, it's even worse than I thought. It's just really fucking bad. I mean, I salute these young filmmakers for doing it on like $10. I mean, yeah, to add more money than that, but it's like, oh man, like even the film quality is just like, you know, subpar. It's actually like you know, fairly dull in many spots. It doesn't have that impact or the power that they totally brought to Evil Dead 2. Like, it's, you know, Evil Dead 2 is actually Evil Dead do-over, you know? And that's filet mignon compared to a crappy flank steak that's been kicked in a gutter, you know? It's just like, oh, man, it was, you know, Bruce Campbell still shines in it. You could see it there. Some of the actors are really trying, but it just didn't have that that much of anything, you know, that they really blossomed into later on. All of those people, the Raimis, all of it. I was just like floored about how really bad it was. Just like, I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. But you might want to apologize to Susan on the ledge. But you know, otherwise, you don't have to apologize.
I love you, Susan. I love you. Evil Dead 2 is gold.
Well, you know, Bill, I had the good fortune to see Groovy Bruce in person from a distance not too long ago.
Bastard.
At the Mahoning Drive-In, they did 2 nights worth of Bruce Campbell movies, 2 triple features, and you know, all of the Evil Dead films were part of the were part of the programming schedule. I'll admit that I think Evil Dead 2, not Evil Dead 2, the original Evil Dead is very slim in terms of its story.
And I
do think it needed either more story or a little more character to really kind of sort of transcend, maybe.
Yeah, I really think they needed more money in the end.
Well,
for what they want. And the things they did were creative with the cameras and stuff. They did some really great stuff, but wasn't enough.
Well, and I think that's more what the attraction with that movie is you know, it's Bruce Campbell before Bruce's Ash turned into kind of a smug, smarmy know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like Ash the early years. Well, it's really interesting to listen to Bruce's voice in the original Evil Dead and then hear him in the subsequent movies. It's like, man, had Bruce gone through puberty at that point? He's got the little kid voice still. He's like probably 19, 20 years old. Yeah, wow.
Like, hey, gee whiz. And then later on, he's Mr. Majestic. And it's like, let me tell you something, kid. And it's like, holy crap. What happened?
Excuse me, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Yeah, Mr. Groovy.
But yeah, you know, I do like, here's my unpopular opinion. Army of Darkness is my favorite Evil Dead film.
And Palco.
Evil Dead after that, and then Evil Dead 2 is third for me. Yeah.
Wow.
And here it is. I think they're all entertaining movies in their own way. That's just how I would rank them personally.
Yeah. Well, no, I still give Evil Dead, you know, 3 stars out of 5, you know, because especially knowing what they worked on and all, but it's just like, ugh. Compared to Evil Dead 2, which I definitely give 4. I love Evil Dead 2. I like, again, I like, oh man, my life sucks. Put in Evil Dead 2 and you'll feel better about it.
I like how Bruce does a really good job of, there's that scene where he's just going crazy and the whole house is going crazy alongside of him.
Love it. Love it.
And he's just laughing hysterically because he's going crazy. That's a big 2020 mood right there, I think.
Totally. Absolutely.
The deer head on the wall is laughing at me. Yeah, that's 2020. Yeah.
Deer head on the wall. Bang, bang, bang. Sorry, I have no idea. No idea. Go ahead, Johnny.
Well, Bill, here's a film that I don't think is categorized as horror, but the roots of it are in the genre. It's part of a greater series/franchise, of which the first film is considered one of the greatest horror films ever made by many, including yourself. This film was highly anticipated, and because, hey, guess who's coming back to direct it? Ridley Scott's coming back to direct this film, so it's gotta be good, right? So back in 2014 or whenever the hell it was, me and my best friend Brian, we went to the theater. I believe his parents went with us, actually. And we sat down for a 3D matinee of Prometheus. Tell us how you really feel about
Oh
it.
boy, you don't want to hear it.
Now, this is probably, yeah, I guess I'm kind of going in descending order with my movies unconsciously today. I didn't intend it to be that way, but it looks like that's where it's headed. This is a film that, again, sitting in the theater, kind of with the expectations behind it, and sort of that bullshit about questions will be answered, okay?
I gave it a half star, Johnny.
No, I mean I don't think that's unfair at all. It was just a
Train wreck.
well, I was sitting there with my friend, and I think we both got really caught up in it. That's the thing, because I did
Were
after watching
you
it for the
drinking
first time.
heavily before you went in there, and you're like, "Wow, we're in space, man. This is great." What was going on, Johnny? What happened?
You know what? Here might be the explanation, Bill. We went to a Chinese restaurant for lunch beforehand, so maybe the Kung Pao chicken was having an effect on me. I don't know. And I was seeing stuff that wasn't there, perhaps.
Yeah,
But
I'd say so.
no, yeah, I think we were all kind of we're just kind of like, oh yay, it's a prequel to Alien, and it's like it's got Ridley Scott's directing it. He knows what he's doing, right?
Oh, no, he
Still,
doesn't. Nope.
no.
Nope.
And
That ship has sailed, man.
yeah, so pretty much I did pick it up on a Blu-ray when it came out, and pretty much the first time I rewatched it, I was like, oh dear.
Oh dear, I can see you saying that.
Oh my, oh my. And
Oh dear.
it was like the My Bloody Valentine remake effect
All
going
over
on.
again.
Yeah, I was like, oh, deja vu from 5 years ago.
My bloody rewatch with Johnny Numb.
Oh, that
Do
there's my next column for Crash Palace. Yeah.
it, baby.
My bloody rewatch. But yeah, I know you have no love for that film, Bill.
Zero, zilch, nada.
Less than I did. I think I gave it like 3.5 after I first watched it, and I've since dropped it down to 1.5.
Watch it again and see how low it goes.
Well, I was listening to. I'll give a shout out to Movies, Films, and Flicks,
Yeah.
with the great Mark Hoffmeyer and a revolving door of guest hosts. And one of his co-hosts were talking about the original Alien earlier this year, and they of course talked a little bit about the sequels and the prequels. And Mark was saying just how ridiculous it was that the guy comes up to the space snake and is like, oh hey, you little cute thing, why don't you come up here, you come over here, you're so cute. And then the stupid space stick winds up attacking the idiot. And I'm like, yeah, there are scenes like that in this movie. It doesn't make a lick of freaking sense. There's so much bad exposition because they can't think of a way to, do things organically or show us things. It's a terribly written movie when it
Oh,
comes to
yeah.
like character motivation and just why anything really is happening in the first place. It is kind of not an abomination, but it's just kind of like you
It
sit
is an
there,
abomination.
once you've gotten through that sort of notion of, oh, once you lower your hyperbole guard and you look at it for what it really is, it's just like, oh no, this is not this 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 is not good. This is bad. And Ridley Scott went on to show he didn't know what he was doing further with Alien Covenant. I don't know how much to blame on the writers of both of those movies, but again, like you say, Bill, he signed off, he looked at that script and said, hey, let's shoot this instead of holding out for something that might have been better. So
I
to him,
hear you.
those movies were worth shooting in whatever form they were in and whatever changes he made to him. So
Man, that was I was I think I punched an old lady when I was leaving a the no, I'm kidding. I was just so like, it was so awful. It was just absolutely hideous. It was so dumb. It was so frigging dumb. I was just absolutely livid.
You know, I'm kind of bummed out that Neil Blomkamp, he had a whole idea.
I know.
Yeah, for a sequel.
That's the one I want.
Yeah, and it looks increasingly, especially now that we're in the midst of a pandemic, and Ridley Scott went back to directing stuff. It looks increasingly like he's not going to get a chance to do his version, which is kind of a drag. So
absolutely, I was still looking forward to it because Neil Blomkamp knows how to tell a story, does special effects like no one else on earth.
Yeah,
I love him to no end. Gosh, I remember when people were like, is there going to be a District 10? oh man, I really hope so. Like, I would trust the sequel to him any day of the week, but
yeah, I mean, Chappie was terrible, but his other stuff is good. Yeah.
Yeah. Every director has that one movie that's filled with regret.
But even with that, I'm with you, Bill. I think he would be a great successor to the Alien series. You know, I think he would do it right. Yeah.
Did anyone see that short film he did with Sigourney Weaver? Raka, RAKKA. Holy mother, watch that. He did that in 2017.
Ooh.
It's phenomenal, man. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I was hoping this was going to be a big film. Talk about proof of concept, and it didn't happen. But that's intense.
Yeah, I feel like they got as far as saying... yeah, we're going to start shooting this movie, and then they yanked it from him. So it was like so close, I think, to being an actual thing. So I'm disappointed with, well, I mean.
He hasn't directed a feature in 5 years, man. Since Chappie.
I think Chappie was the last thing. Yeah. you don't want to make Die Antwoord movie stars. That was a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is my biggest and baddest. It's from 1979, and I really held this movie in high regard for a number of reasons. I love the director who also wrote it. Certain scenes from it are absolutely unforgettable, and I hadn't seen it in many, many moons. And Criterion came out with a release, which I was thrilled to get in advance, pre-ordered, all of that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, and I sit down, and I watch it, and I'm like, this isn't Cronenberg at his best at all. the one actress who I thought was absolutely awful was in a in an interview, 30 years later. Art Hindle said, oh man, she was amazing. I was like, no, she's not, Art. Go back and take a look at the film. It's The Brood from 1979. Oh, and I remember getting caught up in the wildness of it and stuff. But then when I'm sitting down and it's like I'm trying to enjoy this, I realized there wasn't enough Oliver Reed, that there wasn't enough why. Why did this technique work with others? Why was it failing? Why was he like egging this on? That's my little joke to Samantha Egger.
Oh,
thank you very much. Good night again. And it was just like didn't have that punch. It just didn't. It seemed like things were missing from the story. Like they edited out, like not just scenes of exposition or anything like that, but it's something to help hold it together. And it just wasn't working. It was very tenuous. And I was like, this movie just doesn't hold up at all, wow. You know, with this guy's unconventional psychological techniques. And I was just really disappointed watching it. And I'm like, I just spent $40 on this thing. And it's like, friggin' man, it's not, it didn't rock my world. And I love Cronenberg. I mean, he's one of my top 10 directors. He has, you know, things inside and outside of horror that I really appreciate. And,
he's probably top three for me. Yeah.
Shit, he's top three for me too when it comes to horror, especially. And I'm like, wow, this just didn't hold up for me at all in any way, shape, or form. I was just really, it's funny. We were talking about all these other movies being like a half hour too long here, there, and whatnot. And it's like, maybe it needed an extra half hour.
Oh, okay.
You know, or at least an extra 15 minutes. Just like, give me a little, there was like meat missing off the bone. And
so you think there was like, you think there should have been more to it. It wasn't developed enough.
Yeah, there were like gaps, story gaps that I was like, well, why is this going on? Why is that? Like, why? And why now? And blah, blah, like, I don't know. It just, and it just had a beautifully shot and all, of course, you know, and the acting was great otherwise. The little kid was like stiff as a board, but.
the daughter?
Yeah, well, I forgot what her name was, but, Candace, was it? Cindy Harris played it? Cindy Hines played her?
Cindy Hines, yeah.
And there was such a lack of emotion from the kid. I'm like, it's like Village of the Damned. Like, what's going on there? And it just sat there. Like, it wasn't intense or cool. You know, Scanners does that to me a little bit sometimes. Just part, like, Scanners is like, there's something that's not really flowing yet with it, but. I still enjoy it very much, and I enjoy it a lot more than A Brood.
I guess so. It was a little dry for you, I guess. The pacing was just kind of
But I mean, like, my favorite horror movie is Alien, man. And like Ridley Scott said, yeah, the first 45 minutes, nothing happens, and I'm like, I'm fine with that, man. I'm sitting down. I am in it. I'm in it with the music, the visuals, the whole nine. I am in that movie. I am in it. And
I guess. Yeah,
I don't know, man. I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I guess what it sounds like is that Ridley Scott was building 40 minutes of intrigue through all those aesthetics, and the characters, whereas with The Brood, it just wasn't working that way. Cronenberg wasn't really working that same magic.
Yeah, and that late 70s blood, it was like just crappy.
It looks kind of like the orange kind of ketchup,
yeah,
I guess.
I hate that crap.
Yeah.
The French, any French horror movie, they do blood right, because I swear they use real blood. They have to be, man. Inside, Martyrs, it's like, holy crap, they used real blood. You know, it's just, they got it down. But all these other ones, like, is that glowing? It's like, what is that crap, you know? Kids bleeding orange, are they an alien? What's up?
You know, seriously, something that can take me out of a movie is the quality of the blood effects. Sounds kind of superficial, but it's true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, CGI blood is the worst on earth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I was just really hyper disappointed in The Brood. It still has its moments. It's still good overall, but it wasn't exceptional like I had thought.
Yeah, you know, Bill, truth be told, I do have the Criterion edition of that. And though, that said, I haven't watched it in years. Mm-hmm. So, and the thing with The Brood is it never really ranked highly. Not to say I don't think it's good, but it never really ranked within my top, say, my top five Cronenberg films. There was always stuff that I think... resonated a lot more with me for whatever reason. I'll have to come back to that one and see what I think of it.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Whoa, what's going on? Man, that's a spam call coming through my computer. Scumbag spammer motherfuckers. Hi, you need insurance for your car. No, I don't, bitch!
It's David Cronenberg, Bill. He's going to send some Children of Rage over to your house.
Bring it, man, because I'm full of it. I'll take all those little fuckers on. Give me a hammer. I'll take them out.
Oliver Reed was weak. Bill can take him.
Oliver Reed. Man, that guy, man. We should do a show on Oliver Reed.
Oh, hell yeah. No, I like him, and he was apparently quite the quote-unquote character behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully my last pick doesn't disappoint too much, though it disappointed me on subsequent viewings. This maybe has some special significance because back maybe in the first year of Billy and I doing this fine podcasting program of which you are listening, We did shows where we picked out a movie that we were both on polar opposite ends of the spectrum on, and we would both argue about why we stood where we stood on it. And one of the movies we talked about was this little film called You're Next.
Oh, Johnny. My balls ache. Not in a good way.
Well, yeah, longtime listeners of the show will remember that I was defending this movie, my 3.5-star take of this movie against Bill's, I believe, half star take on this movie.
It's a piece of shit, Johnny. It's a piece of shit.
And I was doing my best, and I'd seen it in the theater, and I thought it was, I was again, this wasn't like an experience though where you're caught up in the crowd experience, because I was like only one of three people in the theater. So I must have seen something in this movie that I thought was of overriding quality of some sort, enough to take the stance I did. So again, not unlike Prometheus, I pick up the Blu-ray, pop it in, think to myself, oh, yeah, that's Bill had some points. And then I think I watched it at least maybe one more time after that, and I was like, oh yeah, oh, this no, this thing is not good. This thing is like falling apart like really tender barbecue off of a bone, basically, only it's not delicious.
Although Charlie Vincent is.
Well, she and Barbara Crampton are like the two things
Yes.
that are worth watching in this total mess of a slasher satire send up. I don't know what the hell this movie even is. I think it's labeled, some people label it as a comedy. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
And it's a bunch of like in jokes with Ty West and Joe Swanberg, who are indie filmmakers, hanging out as acting in this movie. It's just a family reunion slasher film that just is very, I don't know, you say something, Bill. I'm just trying to like.
It's just bad. It's built on the back of badness. It's
In the back of badness.
like the whole like it's like people are, oh man, it was great, it was intense, and Larry Fessenden dies again and all this shit. And it was
Oh, he dies in every movie.
no, I've seen movies, it's like holy crap, he made it to the credits.
No, that's true. Yeah.
But that's rare. It is rare. But it's like, they have one character, she runs out of the house, she runs into this wire that's perfectly at a perfect height just for her, and it cuts her head clean off. And it's just like, come the fuck on. Like everything was just so ridiculous. And everybody's acting like an idiot, except for, Sharni Vincent's character, who's like the only one with a brain.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the only thing I liked about the film, Oh wow, characters have masks again. They're running around. That's not frightening anymore. It's not. Every time
No.
any movie I see somebody puts a mask on, it's like I want to click off the TV or whatever I'm watching, walk out of the theater.
And why the hell would you get masks from the dollar store with the cheap rubber band on them, that would break and fall off so easily?
Yeah, exactly. People hiding within the home, undetected, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's just so many holes in the damn thing. Like
Yeah.
the thing where they first arrive at the house, and Barbara Crampton thinks she hears something upstairs, so the father, who's a real drip, goes upstairs to check. But he doesn't even check, because we see a door distinctly creak open
I
upstairs
know.
before they go up to check, and then he's like, "Oh, we checked every room."
It's
It's like
like, come on. Yeah.
it's more like this gaslighting thing of, "Oh yeah, we just walked upstairs, looked around, and didn't really do anything, but we're kind of gaslighting you because you're on meds, you're a woman, and you can't be trusted with your womanly wiles." So yeah,
Yeah.
I was like,
Dumb. It was dumb.
yeah, it was nice to see Barbara Crampton, but I wish she would have been better utilized in that movie. She's just screaming a lot, and even Sharni Vincent, her character is the most resourceful of the bunch, But imagine how good her character would have been, or how much better her character would have been, if that script had been better in the first place.
No, exactly. This is another one like, yeah, horror fans are going to love this. And, you know, a lot of horror fans did. And it's like you're writing it for the lowest common denominator. You know, give us something different. Give us something better. If you're going to do a slasher film, what makes – I would list all the tropes of a slasher film, but it's like we got to make sure none of them happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'd be great, you know, but no. And I'll say it,
Bill, when it finally comes out, the reason for all the carnage that's happening, yeah. It is one of the most cockamamie. Yes. I'm 65 years old. Cockamamie.
You meddling kids.
to quote Clint Eastwood in The Line of Fire, that's a word you kids don't use enough. Cockamamie.
Get in your Gran Torino, baby.
Get off my get off my podcast. but you know, when you finally get around to the ridiculous revelation of why what's happening has happened, I was like, what fucking dumbass thought this was a good idea as a way of achieving this goal?
It exactly.
is the dumbest fucking thing.
I know.
I'm sorry.
I hated it. And it's one of those movies where once I realized that this is pure unadulterated shit, mm-hmm. I was like, I hope they all die. Like every character, I hope they all, everyone. Sharni Vincent, like, yeah, you can get away. But everybody else, I want them destroyed, annihilated, blown up. Nuked. I wanted the house nuked. I just like nuke it. Just, I hated it.
Yeah, and you know that's an interesting thing because the you know Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, who directed mm-hmm. and wrote the thing respectively, I find I have that sort of experience with their other stuff too because you know I saw The Guest. I thought that movie was awesome the first time I watched it, and then each subsequent time I'm like, oh man, this thing has fallen apart like barbecue off the bone here. It's even as a cheesy movie, which it seems to be aiming for at yeah. times, it just is like, oh, this should have been so much better. It should have been so much better beyond that just initial viewing. You know, mm-hmm. that's a problem when you make something with just like the immediate effect of it in mind. You're not going to have, it's not going to endear. It's not going to endure, I don't think. So it's sad. I mean, I don't like to say stuff like that, but heck, it's kind of disappointing.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's going to be disappointing. And I can tell you right now, everybody listening to this podcast, make note, Simon Barrett is writing the Americanized remake of I Saw the Devil.
Ugh, I could already hear wept.
I know. Jesus, bleeding critic, wherever he is, he's crawling out of people's skulls. He's like, he's throwing a tantrum and you don't want to be around him when he throws a tantrum because it's not going to be pleasant.
No.
Bleeding critic's going to run amok when he hears that one.
Bill, for whatever it's worth, I think that has been in talks for like years now. So I don't, does it say anything about what stage of development that's in?
No, it's still 2017. So maybe it's not going to happen, but they have producers. Yeah. They have producers. It's already been written. Simon Barrett's already rewritten Hong Jung Park's script. Adam Wingard slated to direct. No actors attached as of yet, but there are two production companies involved. Like I said, four producers. Whew.
You know, again, Bill, that's I Saw the Devil's like a 9 out of 10 for me. I don't.
Yeah.
It's well, I know, I think you have issues with it, but
no, I do. I don't want to, but I think my issues are sound and it's like, I want this explained to me, but that's another story for another time.
Well, yeah, of course. So yeah. Anyway, those are my movies, Bill. And I think that brings us to the end of this somewhat cathartic show.
Yeah, I feel better. No, I don't. But I'm going to feel better after I read these scream outs to these awesome souls that you can follow on Twitter.
Yay.
The first one on the list is Ruthless74147, but he is not a number. As he says, I am ruthless. I am the ruthless one. Taurus gamer, a true fan of all things horror, horror addict, horror movies, MMA, brutality. 18 plus, horrifying people follow me. I follow back. Where does he live? The dark side. Awesome. And if you want your horror movie survival guide, you go to We Are, the letter R, Into Survival. That's their Twitter handle. A podcast where unlikely gore hounds such as Julia C. Marchese and the Terry Gamble, T-E-R-I Gamble, discuss how to survive horror films to be the final girl. How cool is that? They're out of L.A. They're right in the center of cool Hollywood stuff. Oh, my gosh, I'm on the wrong coast. Anyway, that's...
We both are. We're in the wrong state, too. Yeah.
I want to go 300 years in the future and see what's left, if anything. Anyway, also follow Neff _ Goldblum. Listen to the brilliant ensemble playing of Banks, Collins, and Rutherford. You can practically hear every nuance of every instrument. That's all you need to know. Check out Neff Goldblum. Boom. The beautiful, the lovely, the vivacious, the goddess herself, Goddess Maureen. As she says, I am the love goddess. Follow moi to paradise. I write and act, and I'm currently known for my erotica. Check her out. Vanessa, who's she? She is The Overlook SC. She's in the horror Morningside role play. As she says, and this is somebody else you could follow, and this is cool because listen to this, I love it. Cenobite's master is my dom, and Cenobite submit is his queen. Ooh. So if you don't like our tweets, look the other way, damn it. Over 18 and over out of the United Kingdom. And part of the reason I always loved Hellraiser is because, my God, they're sadomasochists from another dimension. I just love it. So that fits in perfectly.
Yep.
Tracy underscore TR. She is the chief operating officer of Terror Records and the owner of Scream Radio, also known as Horror Radio, that you could follow. Wine. She's in, I love this. This is like she's the perfect woman. Wine, reading, bacon, and horror.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is. And you could also follow her on terrorrecordsinc.com. She's a beautiful woman. Amazing. The Movie Workshop, follow them at Workshop Movie. Him, rather. I design and make custom steel sculptures and artwork based on horror, sci-fi, and comic books. Some of his work is just fantastic. Oh, and did I mention I'm a huge horror fan who likes the odd? And he's out of his workshop. It says Worksop, England. We'll just leave it at that. You could follow him on Etsy. T. Carter, who's that? He is the horror _ disciple, the horror disciple himself. I have two awesome daughters. I've seen pictures. They're a wonderful, beautiful family. He's blessed. An amazing wife, and I've had a passion for horror movies ever since I was a kid out of Bowling Green, Kentucky. Mm. Two more. The great Eddie J. Morales, who you could follow at Morales _EJ. Horror author of short horror stories, paranormal, slasher, supernatural, zombies, and much more. He's followed by Keith Allen Du from Z Nation, and he's out of Florida. And check out his books on Amazon as well as EddieJoseMorales.com. And this person, wonderful person, just relocated from Las Vegas back to the East Coast near me. A wonderful award-winning filmmaker and producer himself, the great Skip Bolden, an absolute gentleman. One of the coolest looking guys you'll ever see. You can check him out on IMDb.com and also go to touchoflifeproductions.com. And as he says, and as Johnny and I do, support indie film. We hope you do as well. So that is that. Those are the scream outs for tonight.
Awesome, Bill. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I didn't do anything. I just read. And I didn't really flub it. And now I'm drinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, you read them very well, Bill.
I was determined.
Yeah, that's good. Determination's good. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies and no H's in those Numbs. You can also find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And also at 1428elm.com. it's a pleasure to write for the wonderful Susan Layton, a.k.a. Susan on the Ledge, who we mentioned earlier on the show.
Love that woman.
Yeah, she's fantastic, and she's in the midst of her own
transition
from the East Coast to the West, out West. So
I know we were hoping to get together at Banner's Heart Cider for some cider, but that looks like that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed about
I
that, but
know. That's
you
all
know,
right.
life happens. Yeah.
It does, whether we want it to or not.
Oh, you ain't kidding. So, where can people find you, Bill?
Well, people could find me at CrashPalaceProductions.com, where you'll find links to this show, the Last Knock podcast, as well as articles from our own Johnny Numb, as well as other fabulous people. And you could also follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace, and also Noir Kink, which is for my Kink Noir, Neo Noir book series of erotic crime thrillers.
Yes.
So there we go.
Looking forward to diving into debauchery, Bill.
Oh, I'm looking forward to your review, whatever it is. I think I'm going to have to, I might start shooting heroin before I listen or check out the reviews.
Well, you know, that's apparently a good catalyst for creativity if my heroes have taught me anything.
Oh,
so.
God, no, I can't. I can't do that, man. I can't go that route. I don't want to hurt.
No, I don't want you to either.
Too many horror stories. I just sniff heroin. I'm not shooting it up.
There you go. That works.
All right, man. So that's it for Diminishing Returns. I'm sure you have your stories. If you're so compelled, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And if not, then we'll catch you on the next show.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, buddy. Have a great one.
You too, Bill. See ya.
Yep. Bye.